Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius of Kent State University, and this week my guest is colleague Dr. Steve Rainey from Kent State. We will be talking about how to create a supportive school environment for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered students. Welcome to Counselor Audio Source, and with me today is Dr. Steve Rainey of Kent State University, and we're going to talk today about GLBT issues and GLBT issues with students in school settings.
Okay.
Steve, why don't you give us a little background, give our listeners a little background about yourself and your interest in GLBT students.
Well, I was a school counselor for 6 years in the Dallas, Texas area. And I was actually at an alternative school, so it was a behavioral-based alternative school. So we had kids that were behavior problems at a level where the regular schools didn't want them in the schools. And periodically kids would come that were gay or transgendered, and they were, as you can imagine, in that sort of school, severely harassed, and there were very few kids that didn't harass them. Hmm. So it was kind of moving to see the real difficulty that those kids faced. I also, for whatever reason, developed over the years several friends that were gay or lesbian couples, and I had an interest in that area. So I studied family therapy kind of in light of same-sex couples. So that all kind of converged into essentially a dissertation, I guess, related to attitudes towards gay and lesbian people.
And this was attitudes of?
Of master's level counseling students. So master's I was looking at counseling students and what their attitudes were toward gay and lesbian people.
Okay. Well, I know your emphasis is being a school counselor, a focus on schools. So are there some issues that GLB students deal with in schools today?
Well, yeah, plenty. I think probably the one that's most well known is harassment, and obviously there are stories of kids being beaten up and hurt, and you know, jokes about them and that sort of thing. And of course, they face those kinds of things. Beyond that, which most people are pretty aware of, are just your basic developmental issues. Adolescence is a hard enough time as it is anyway to get through with, you know, the whole ideas of individuation and self-identity and all of that, and those things are difficult to tackle. But when you add on top of that being gay or lesbian, that really makes their challenge of adolescence, so to speak, even
so they're
that
going
much more
through
difficult.
Sort of the separate identity development piece too, or an additional identity.
Right. An additional is the way I would look at it, because they have the same ones that everybody else has, plus the whole, am I gay? Yes, I'm gay. Okay, what do I do about that? Those kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's where questions start arising in terms of coming out or issues of coming out.
Right. We've talked with several school counselors here in the Akron area, and they say that students are coming to them more and more and more often with issues of being gay, whether they are questioning whether they're gay or not, or they are and they don't know what to do about it. Who do I come out to? All of those kinds of things. And so school counselors are facing that more and more often.
And other issues, isolation?
Yeah. Students quite often will be isolated. But as soon as people think they're gay, whether they're gay or not, they, you know, kind of become marginalized and isolated, and they're not well accepted into any of the groups that schools have typically. So it becomes a point of isolation, and in fact, that's a way a lot of them deal with it. They, you know, they're gay, and so they don't want to get beaten up. They don't want to be harassed, so they just kind of, you know, fade into the woodwork, so to speak.
So how do students address this, and how do they, or what are ways that they're naturally overcoming these this challenge. Yeah.
Well, I mentioned the isolation piece. They'll just kind of try to mm-hmm. sort of hide. Another one is called passing, and so they try to pass as though they're heterosexual. And in fact, there have been some studies that show that kids that are gay, particularly boys, become overly sexual with girls during their high school years, trying kind of covering for it. There's some pretty well-known examples of professional athletes who have mm-hmm. kind of done the same thing, and then once their career is over, they've come out and explained that they felt they had to do that to maintain their position on the team and standing in the locker room, so to speak. Some just go straight up, kind of in your face kind of way mm-hmm. of dealing with it, and I'm gay and what are you going to do about it kind of thing, almost at a protest kind of level. Interestingly, those kids sometimes are very well received by the other kids. And if we could figure out what the magic is on that, it would be very beneficial. But some kids can just come out and be out, and everybody seems to be okay with it, whereas others just come out and then they just get harassed even further. And I don't really know what that piece is. That might be something to look into in the future.
So some resiliency with those kids who come out and are with it. And are well accepted, and it seems to be okay for them.
So, you know, you could theorize on some of the reasons that occurs, and my first guess would be that there's good support at home, that mm-hmm. the parents are okay with it and are supportive of them as who they are, so that the harassment or whatever that they get at school mm-hmm. isn't as big a deal to them, and for whatever reason, it just kind of disappears. Another possible way of dealing with it, and it's fairly controversial in certain parts of the country and in specific schools, but is the idea of a gay-straight alliance. It's a kind of a support group organization for gay kids mm-hmm. and provides a place for them to go and get support where they can be at school and at least have a few moments of feeling safe and secure. But
it's an alliance between
gay
and straight, accepting.
Accepting students. The interesting thing that occurs with that is any of the straight students who join that are suddenly assumed to be gay. And so it takes quite a strong individual to join that group, whether they're gay or not gay, because they're going to face a lot of the discrimination, harassment, joke-telling, whatever that occurs. They all face it.
So you kind of alluded to some of the supports that are available in the school, or the possibility if you have a gay-straight alliance, if you've got good support from other folks in the school as a student comes out. But are there other supports for students at schools?
Well, hopefully school counselors would be supports for them. I mean, you know, that's kind of an assumption that we make that I don't know that is always there. Usually there are individuals within schools, you know, the certain teacher or the certain counselor or I don't know, the nurse, whoever it may be in the school, that students kind of get to know that they're supportive and they will, you know, seek out support from them. Others, I mentioned the Gay Straight Alliance. There's also an organization called Gay Lesbian Straight Educators Network. And that's a national organization typically for teachers and administrators who are gay and have, you know, kind of harassment, maybe job discrimination, those kinds of things against them. So they have organized, and then the kids understand which teachers are part of that and know that those teachers are supportive, and that going to them with any whatever issues might come up would be a safe place for them to go. Developing formal supports in schools in some places is easy. Gay Straight Alliance goes in and nobody even thinks about it. In other places, it is fought from the beginning to the end of its implementation. That's unfortunate. I think it's our current political climate. Just recently, elections to ban same-sex marriage and those kinds of things is a sign of that the climate is not real good for sexual minority people at this time.
And I think that argument has become sort of a heightened argument over the last 10 years or so.
Right.
We're seeing more and more of that from both ends becoming sort of a heightened awareness and a heightened issue. more divisive sort of ways of being. Issues going beyond the school. We talked about the school support network, and
right.
You've talked about, you know, the individual sort of what they can be doing. But are there issues that go beyond the schools that can be help students address the issues of identity?
Yeah, obviously, if a kid comes out. Or is questioning, the parents are usually well aware that they're questioning when the kid comes out. Then suddenly there are issues for the parents. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it as out of the area of responsibility for schools to support the parents through that process. Mm-hmm. As I heard it put one time, when the kids come out to the parents, then the parents are put in a position where they're coming out for the rest of their lives, because other people will question them about their kids. So they're essentially coming out about the fact that they have a gay or lesbian son or daughter. And so they have to go essentially through the same kind of coming out process.
And I would wonder if parents who are sort of in that position, I mean, it's sort of sharing what people consider a personal secret,
right?
Or in this society, it needs to be considered a personal secret. There's some questions inside their heads about, well, how much do I share? When do I share? What do I share? Is it right? Do I have a right to share?
Right. Well, yeah. You know. Then obviously there's the coming out process. I think that's a place where school counselors could really be helpful. Is helping kids decide who to come out to, when to come out, if to come out at all, those kinds of things. I mentioned parent support, supporting parents through that, obviously, when that occurs. Kind of another area that's related is same-sex couples whose kids are in the schools. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the most typical one is the kid that has two moms. And what sort of harassment does he or she face while they're at school because, you know, his family is two women rather than a man and a woman. They face quite a lot, and then the parents may need support through that as well, but I think the student really kind of does. Mm-hmm. And then another one, and I've not seen anything on this in the literature anywhere. That doesn't mean, obviously, that it doesn't exist, but I haven't seen it on what's an effect of a sibling. Say my brother is gay, what sort of effect is that going to have on me, particularly at school? Will I be harassed? Will people understand that I'm not necessarily like my brother, or those kinds of issues? I haven't seen anything written on that.
You know, and sort of what happens to the different members in the family system, not only
right.
the parents, but also siblings in the family, in terms of people's reaction to a child or an adolescent or coming out.
Right. Yeah, there's kind of, I don't know, kind of fallout for everybody that's directly connected to that kid.
So I'd like to raise the question then, school counselors.
Mm-hmm.
If we're, you know, our audience here is about school, about counselors and how counselors can help. What can school counselors do regarding these issues?
Well, when I think of school counselors immediately, I begin to think about the Ask a National model. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the Ask a National model is pushing is advocacy. So I think that school counselors can certainly advocate for the gay and lesbian groups in schools, because there is a lot of resistance a lot of times to supporting gay and lesbian students in schools. One of the other things that they push for, and these two are really pretty connected, is a systemic change. What can counselors do to maybe change the climate of the school culture or the community in the area, change their climate, attitudes towards gay and lesbian,
adolescents. So it's about advocating within the community for the benefit of students.
In the community and the school. So school counselors, I guess, are being asked to look at a bigger picture than just individuals or maybe small groups of kids. The other part is just simple education. Most school counselors do classroom guidance, and that can be worked into classroom guidance. Anytime issues of identity come up, just the fact that some people are gay can be added into those pieces of instruction. I remember in the sixth grade, and we had the the video, or it was a film strip. Some people may be old enough to remember film strips, but it was a film strip on human development and that sort of thing. And they split us up, boys on one side and girls on the other side, and talked about how we were going to be attracted to one another. You know, now I think we realize that not everybody is necessarily going to be attracted to the, person of the opposite sex. So just in those kinds of things would be a place where you could add in that, you know, it's a possibility that it's likely that some of the kids in the room will be attracted to those of the same sex. So that could be worked in. I think another place for school counselors will be in staff development kinds of things, providing instruction on gay and lesbian students. The research has said anywhere from 2 to 20% of the population are gay or lesbian, and, you know, depending on who you believe. So I typically go with 10% because it's kind of in the middle and because the math is easy. You know, if you've got a school of 500 kids and you do the 10% thing, 50 of them are gay. And so that's a large segment of your school that that have these issues. And having the faculty and staff sensitive to those kinds of things and working with them on not cracking the gay jokes and stuff, the kids do it enough, you know, where they don't have to hear the faculty and staff do it.
Yeah, how do you address the intolerance? The homophobia, because I know from stories I've heard, it's not just kid to kid. It's also faculty to kid and faculty to faculty, and so maybe there's a couple of levels of the system there. There's child to child, there's faculty or staff or faculty to child, and then there's faculty to faculty. And Are there ways that you've heard of or seen that address the intolerance or the homophobia?
I've not. I don't know of anything formal, you know, where it would be instruction. But I think just some instruction, good solid information about, you know, I guess you could say the prevalence, that it isn't abnormal. The example I use a lot of times is handedness. Roughly 10% of the people in the world, I believe, are left-handed. That doesn't make them abnormal. They're not average, but they're not abnormal. So it's kind of a normal difference that just occurs in people. To get people to see that, I think for them to understand that the level of the derogatory terms that are used hurt just as bad as some of the ones that we've had in our history.
Does any of this type of harassment fit under zero tolerance rules in schools?
Many schools have zero tolerance, but for whatever reason, that one seems to be tolerated, if that makes sense. Some places it doesn't. Again, I'm generalizing. I don't want people to think that every school in the country is the same, because they're simply not. But I would say in most places, if a student or a faculty member makes a negative comment about someone being gay, or just kind of the general, oh, that's so gay, kind of comment, that just doesn't get addressed.
One of the things counselors can do is sort of look into how or if that's even addressed within their school system. If they do have zero tolerance around certain sorts of harassments, then does the whole idea of sexual orientation or sexual identity fit under those sorts of rules in schools?
Right, and I think that's a perfect issue for counselors, since they're kind of charged with helping students maintain personal and social health, I guess would be a way to put that, and more of a psychological kind of health. And I guess confronting that, trying to get administration to understand that needs to be as intolerable as other things, and to, you know, I guess enforce the rules around that.
So are there ways that schools can collaborate with each other around assisting GLBT youth?
Yeah, a couple of ways. I think probably the most obvious one is if a school's trying to implement a gay-straight alliance or some organization like that, what other schools that have done it, they could get consultation from them on how to go about it, maybe how to avoid some of the problems, what problems typically come up and how do you overcome those kinds of things. Another possible way is some schools may have a person with the level of expertise in it that they might be able to, you know, share across schools to help provide that in-service training that I mentioned earlier, that sort of thing. So that's certainly ways that schools could collaborate. You know, and I'm glad you brought up collaboration, because one of the things in the ASCA model is that school counselors collaborate and kind of do that at different levels, again, maybe from school to school, but it could also be done within the building. Like I mentioned earlier, certain teachers kids know well and know that are supportive, and you could collaborate with them on your presentation to faculty and staff or whatever. Because like most people, if they're hearing it from their peers, it carries a lot more weight than if it's somebody who seems to be talking at them about something. So that's a way of doing that. Again, just different people in schools have different strengths and different sets of knowledge. The school nurse would have some, you know, health-related kind of knowledge that maybe the school counselor or teachers don't have that they could contribute on those things. So I think thinking about a collaboration, which, again, goes back to that systemic change, the more people you can bring in, I think the better, the more powerful it will be.
Okay. I want to ask you a question that kind of brings it down to the face-to-face stuff.
Okay.
You're a school counselor, and a student comes in and is questioning.
Right.
What are the kind of things as a school counselor you maybe need to keep in the back of your head?
Many kids come to the school counselor or other counselors, as far as that goes, and are questioning. They're wondering, maybe I'm gay. And to me, the very first question you ask them is, well, what makes you think that? There are, more so with boys than girls, I believe, but there are is what I've heard termed sex play in that 10, 11, 12 kind of pre-adolescent age, where there will be some sexual exploration between two boys or between two girls. And that's pretty normal kind of developmental things. But a lot of boys, as soon as they start learning about the idea of someone being gay, think, oh, my God, I did that. Does that make me gay? So a lot of kids come in thinking they're gay just because they've done that. Again, the counselor has to be comfortable with those kinds of conversations to say, well, I don't know that that really means anything. You may or may not be gay, but that's certainly not something that's going to determine it one way or the other.
Yeah, sexual orientation, sexual preferences have got a lot of components to it.
And I would, you know, kind of follow that, if that's what they bring up, you know, kind of follow that with what, you know, the typical what else. Is there anything else that makes you think you might be gay?
As a counselor, what kind of things do you have in place with yourself in order to be adequately addressing students or clients coming in?
Well, I think number one, a level of comfort with the topic. A lot of people are uncomfortable with the topic. Some people are uncomfortable with the topic of sex in general. And then when somebody comes in questioning that, then there's a level of discomfort. So if you can have just a level of comfort where you can first of all, don't panic when the topic gets brought up. Maintain your head about you and have some compassion. I mean, that's pretty standard counselor stuff, is having some, having compassion for the, for your client. And, you know, if a lot of people have religious issues around gay and lesbian things, there's societal things, becoming, you know, from the community, that sort of thing.
So I have to be pretty well aware of where I stand on these issues before I am comfortable with sitting down with a client to make sure that I'm the client is getting the experience of them and not the experience of me.
Right, exactly. That self-awareness piece and, you know, finding a way, if it does create discomfort in you, finding a way to work around that. to me, the biggest way to work around it is to work on it yourself and get yourself where you are comfortable with those topics.
You know, better educated, better understanding. And at the same time, I think, you know, I've worked with some students who have said in training, who have mm-hmm. said, I'm not going to deal with LGBTQ
right.
clients. That's just the way it is.
That standard, I'll refer them.
I'll refer them. And it's sort of, well, that kind of puts you in a position to really limit the possibility of people that you're working with.
I think the one really negative part about just the idea of I will just refer them, particularly in schools, is there may not necessarily be anybody to refer them to on the one hand. But on the other hand, how many times does a kid have to come see you before he develops a level of trust to bring that topic up with you? So you've developed this relationship, this level of trust. Then they hit you with, I think I might be gay. Mm-hmm. Do you, after maybe a year and a half in a school where you've had, you know, you're going to have the kid for 3 years at the middle school, let's say, do you just abandon him at that point?
And does that abandoning a referral re-stigmatize the whole issue?
Right. I mean, the one person, or maybe not the one person, but one of the people in this kid's life that he trusted enough to bring that topic up with, mm-hmm. essentially just turns it off at that point. I will just refer can be quite damaging, depending on how that gets handled.
So, any other suggestions for sort of the counselor piece in dealing directly with students who might be raising sexual identity?
I think, like everything else, just continue to maybe go to conferences, and if there's a presentation on gay and lesbian things, go in. Maintain your level of knowledge. I think one way to do it is to seek out students or maybe other adults that you know are gay and force yourself to be around them to create a level of comfort. I know the first few times that I was in, I guess, what would be considered the gay community in Dallas, there was a level of discomfort in me, but after a while it just completely mm-hmm. went away, and so I was perfectly comfortable.
And I presume you had to kind of get in touch with where that discomfort feeling was coming
right.
from and what that was about in you in order to be kind of
right.
transcend that.
I think for me, one of the issues there was, if I'm seen down there, they're going to think I'm gay too. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced that through my dissertation and making presentations. A colleague of mine was in the audience one time when I was making a presentation, and there was a conversation going on between two people that sat right near him. They were in a, not a debate, but they almost had a bet over whether I was gay or not. And every time I would say something, one would go, "See, I told you he's gay." And then I would say something else, and the other would go, "See, I told you he's straight." So, so at some point I overcame that feeling as well.
What I like about that story is the fact that people were putting so much energy into trying to figure that out.
Exactly.
And, you know, that says more about them than it does about you.
Right. And again, I think maybe that goes to, you're talking about what is it in me, where does that discomfort come from? So here are counselors, and I give them credit, they were in the mm-hmm. in the presentation, and maybe that's part of the process that they need to go through to gain a little higher level of self-comfort around that issue. Mm-hmm. Is have those discussions, and so that's a fairly open discussion, kind of, I suppose, at my expense, but I guess I'm happy to provide that opportunity for them.
Well, you know, and I'm thinking about our conversation here, and I just to kind of be in the moment, I'm sure there are some things that maybe some people have heard that have been not as on track as you or I would have wanted them to be.
Right.
And that's, so this continues to be a place where we're all growing in.
Right.
So, about growing and about university training systems, I guess a couple more questions for you.
All right.
What role does university programs have in preparing school counselors for addressing?
Well, I think to begin with, there's anybody who works with clients that are, I would say, 13 or older, maybe even going down lower than that, but anybody 13 or older is going to have a gay client at some point, mm-hmm. unless they have a really short career and they don't pay attention. So I think it's our responsibility, and it's in the KCREP standards too, that there is some instruction on gay and lesbian issues. I know here at Kent State, and you teach the multicultural class, there's a good segment of that course related to that, and I hear the students talking about the identity development models and that sort of thing, and it's kind of refreshing for me to hear that. I bring the issue up in the school counseling courses that I teach, make sure that we talk about that. And obviously that's not the only kind of minority group we talk about, but talk about that. And then in the counseling adolescents course, we have a good segment of that because that's a really serious issue, I believe, particularly with adolescents as they develop into adults.
And we taught both of those this summer, and I had students kind of sharing information.
Oh, okay.
They were in both classes, and they were like, well, it's just like Dr. Rainey talked about in,
right,
in so-and-so.
Yeah, so that's kind of nice to hear that it's going on in multiple classes, mm-hmm, and not just the 15 minutes in the multicultural class, and then you kind of move on. So I think the universities are very responsible for that. I think helping students overcome their bias, mm-hmm, developing that self-awareness, how you go about that. There are multiple ways, you can bring in the gay or lesbian speaker or whatever and get them to know. Mm-hmm. There's some research that shows that your positive experiences with gay and lesbian people causes you to be less uncomfortable around them. Which, I mean, that makes sense. But then negative experiences with them cause you to be more uncomfortable with them. So it's bringing in the speaker is a bit of a roll of the dice depending on how that experience goes, I guess. Yeah. And then I think for school counselors, teaching leadership skills, how to advocate for certain populations, I think we need to teach them to have the ability and the intestinal fortitude to go to the principal or the superintendent or whoever's most appropriate to, as you say, talk about the zero tolerance and why doesn't this fit into that, and we need to make sure that these things are addressed.
Or, as you had said, the idea of making sure everyone's mental and physical health are supported by a school system, and that might mean having a available place groups that LGBTQ kids can get in involved in.
No, I agree.
So, Steve, I know that you've done some research in this.
Right.
As part of your dissertation. Can you talk a little bit about, and you completed that, it's getting ready for publication. Can
right.
you talk a little bit about what the dissertation was about and what kind of things that you saw were significant yeah. from it?
We looked at attitudes towards sexual minorities, and several factors come up in the literature, and so I did a regression to determine which factors kind of impacted the attitudes most. And kind of not surprisingly, as someone put it, it's those core values kind of impacted it. The one I mentioned earlier is the quality of your experience with gay and lesbian people prior. It's had a pretty significant impact. But the other two things were religious beliefs and political views.
And you've kind of mentioned both of those.
Right. So the pretty clearly the more politically conservative people were, the more negative were their attitudes. And the more religious people were, their attitudes were more negative. But there is kind of a U shape on that because there are certain religions that do support same-sex couples and gay and lesbian people, and that is embraced. There are certain denominations right now that are going through a bit of turmoil mm-hmm. around those issues. Just because you're highly religious doesn't necessarily mean you have a negative attitude. In fact, it could enhance a positive attitude, but for the most part, highly religious people had more negative attitudes.
Okay, so actualize that for the counselor. You talked about positive exposure
right.
to LGBTQ folks. You also spoke about religiosity.
Right.
You spoke about political orientation.
Right. And I think that kind of goes back to that self-awareness thing and the university's responsibility. From that, you can take you could say to your class, you know, if you're politically conservative, it's likely that you're going to have negative views, and that's something that you need to think about and address, and how are you going to work with this. If you're highly religious, the same thing, depending on, you know, which kind of religious affiliation you may have. So, you know, looking at those things are things that are going to get in the way of you having unconditional positive regard for maybe a gay client.
Or someone could say maybe not get in the way if the client has the same sort of political and spiritual values.
Right. And gay people come to counseling quite often due to a conflict of who they are and what their religious beliefs have been, are, and there's a lot of conflict there within themselves. Mm-hmm. And counselors have to be ready to handle those kind of issues, I think, as well.
Well, it's from the counselor end, then it's a piece about keeping sort of your value and your orientation and having a good understanding of your experiences
right.
with LGBTQ clients, your values as they are around religiosity, spirituality, and your values as they are in terms of political orientation. And, you know, being really present and aware of those as you're working with folks who might have a different orientation.
Right. And kind of what are the nonverbal messages you send? Mm-hmm. You know, and working with that. If there's a level of discomfort, I think you communicate that, whether you do it verbally or not, that still gets communicated, your discomfort. So it's definitely something for people to work on, that self-awareness piece.
Is there anything else that kind of emerged from your study that you'd like to share?
One interesting thing is I did control for socially desirable responding.
Oh, okay.
To make sure that, you know, that people responded to the instruments in an honest way. And that had a almost right at zero correlation. So people apparently responded quite honestly, which I thought was a good comment on counselors in training, that they did, you know, really give their best answers to those questions, which I think gave a little more validity to the study that these are the things. One thing that came up in the literature that had only been looked at once, and I don't know that it's been looked at again, was someone found significance and a significant correlation between the number of counseling sessions that someone had been in as a client and their attitudes towards gay and lesbian people.
Oh, okay.
Now, mine did not come out with any significance there, but I think the main reason for that was there was like 60% of the people in my survey had never been in counseling.
Wow.
So you've got about 60% had zeros on there, so it was really difficult to get any kind of picture.
So these
on
were students
that.
These were students in training.
Students in training.
Survey,
and 60%
had never been in to
right.
A,
which yeah. obviously brings up that whole question, should we make them be in counseling or not? And that's a debate for another time.
Yeah, or at least to somehow have those experiences. Yeah, that's another podcast. It'll be a great podcast,
yeah.
I think. So what else could be done to help make GLB students' lives easier, sort of as a summative question?
I guess thinking more globally, I think the national and state organizations, or maybe even local organizations, could maybe take a little firmer stand than they have, because I know Mark Pope, when he was president, formed the I'll probably not get the title right, but it was a task force for sexual minority youth in schools, and that is still in progress, and the idea is to get educators from faculty, administration, all that, to kind of have a big education piece, so they maybe understand it better. And we're talking about the no tolerance policy. Maybe they would see the importance of that in there. I know that ASCA, I think it was about 2000, give or take a year or two in there, but they mailed out to all of the school superintendents in the nation a statement regarding sexual minority youth. Mm. And with suggestions on things that they could do and prevalences and those kinds of things in that publication.
So it'll be interesting to find out if that got enacted or to what level that's enacted at this point.
Right. That would be interesting. It would be interesting to find out, you know, here we are 5 or 6 years later to see if anything was done, and if it was done, has anything continued, or was it one of those things that we do it for a year or so and then let it drop? Mm-hmm. And then I think local organizations, you know, the state and local level could certainly maybe team with PFLAG, that's a Parents of and Friends of Lesbian and Gay People. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful organization. It's really supportive of particularly parents, I think, that are upset by the whole process. As I mentioned earlier, they have to start coming out themselves, so that it helps them through that process. But I think some teaming with GLSEN and PFLAG and other organizations within communities, the state and local level could work with them.
You know, and it's interesting you say that at a state and local level, if you're going to impact schools, you're going to impact mm-hmm. school districts, and you're going to impact them on the local or the state level.
Right.
More so than
at the national level. See, for example, the mailing from ASCA, that mailing shows up in the superintendent's office. You wonder really what happens mm-hmm. to that. It would be interesting to know just the number that just hit the trash that never even got opened. I admire the effort. What effect it had, I don't know that we know that, but and ASCA also has a pretty strong position statement that students that are gay and lesbian deserve all of our services and mm-hmm. Should be advocated for, and you know that there's a real nice position statement on that with ASCA. Mm-hmm. So there's an effort at the national level, but I think maybe bringing it down to the state level, as you say, would have more impact on schools because that's where the direct impact would be.
Well, today we've been speaking with Dr. Steve Rainey. He's an assistant professor at Kent State University about counseling and counseling issues for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered youth in the schools.
Right.
And I want to thank you for being with us today,
thank
Steve.
You.
And enjoyed your conversation, and thanks for being at Counselor Audio Source.
Well, thank you.
My thanks to our guest today, Dr. Steve Rainey of Kent State University, speaking on developing GLBT-supported school environments.
Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorAudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work. Thank you.